Good evening, coming to you from Heathensboro, Pennsylvania. This is Doubting Dogma, and I am your host, Molly Ann Mormon. And from what, Minneapolis now, is it?
St. Paul.
St. Paul. From St. Paul, Minnesota, because she decided to move five states away or something like that, is our lovely purple Amazon, Riss McCool.
Thank you so much. And, you know, you're always welcome here. It's amazing how much different the atmosphere is.
As far as the acceptance you get and the religiosity or...
I mean, it's there, especially if you go outside of the metro area, because, you know, you can always tell how far away from the Twin Cities you are based on how many abortion billboards per capita. But within the city and even within traveling outside of the city, I've had zero bad experiences except like being misgendered once when I wasn't like in makeup or anything. And that's more my problem than theirs at that point. So, yeah, 2 hours in Utah, 20 slurs. 2 weeks in Minnesota, zero. I consider that a win.
See, and I have been to Utah every summer growing up pretty much because my dad's family's there. That's where the family reunion is. We're going out there in July. And I mean, it makes sense, but because I fit the absolute norm there, you know, a little visiting Mormon white chick, you know, all that. Like, you don't notice that.
No.
And every time you were posting stuff, I was just, like, crying inside. I was like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that I've been there so much. And I never see the side of this because I don't have to deal with it. And I hurt for you and I wanted to give you a big hug.
Oh, well, one thing you got to keep in mind, and this is something that I get accused of, like, oh, that doesn't happen. None of my friends do it or anything like that. And it's like, well, not being a queer person, you're probably not going to see it unless you're with us when it happens. Well, but yeah, that doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
I mean, like I said, I never saw it. And I've been there every summer for at least a week. Ever since I was, you know, knee high to a grasshopper, and, you know, never see it. I mean, of course, most of the time, up until recently, when I actually started meeting people who were in the LGBTQ community, it never even crossed my mind. It wasn't a thing that ever occupied my thoughts.
Right.
But now I'm like hyper aware.
Yeah.
Because I have met so many and they're all such awesome people and they get treated like absolute crap. And I'm like, oh, I hope I never did that. Like, yeah. Without meaning to. I hope I wasn't one of those people.
I don't know if
probably was, but I hope I'm better than that now.
have you listened to Gaytheist this week by chance?
No, I've only listened to a couple of theirs because I'm so, like, anal OCD about catching up on the entire back catalog of one before I move on to the next.
That's fair. This week, it was a conversation that really punched me in the gut. She had on someone who was a former Aryan Nation person and now expressing reason and, you know, all of this stuff. And it was a hard enough interview to listen to as it was. But then he told this story about his biggest regret, which was he helped bully a kid into suicide and he couldn't take it back.
Oh, my gosh.
And the worst part of it was that he didn't know his name and that killed him the most. And I was in Wisconsin traffic. Stopped in the third different state, traveling back from Flint, Michigan, which I'll explain in a minute, and that still just like stopped me cold. And I had a very emotional week, to say the least.
Oh yeah, definitely. Oh,
but one of the things
that I can't even imagine trying to live with that.
Yeah, one of the things that I hear a lot from people who mean well is, you know, well, you guys have your own month now. You know, I don't think it's that bad, or, you know, it's not as bad as it is in other places. It's like, it's not a competition. You know, just because it's not Saudi Arabia where we're not getting murdered doesn't mean it's A-OK. And once again, just because you don't see it doesn't mean it doesn't exist. And one of my biggest critics is someone from Texas who says, you know, this is why we voted for Trump, because all you do is whine and all that stuff. And I'm like, okay, let's just assume that you and every single person you know have never said anything homophobic or transphobic, given the way you're talking to me. I highly doubt it, but let's just assume. Even if that was true, it probably isn't, that's still anecdotal at best. Like, I know a lot of people. I'm to the point of visibility that I can go to pretty much any major city in this country and find at least one friend. And even if every single one of those had never said something shitty, that would still be anecdotal. But like I said, 2 hours in Salt Lake City, 20 different times we were yelled at. And, you know, sometimes it was out a car window. One of the times we were walking by a place where people were sitting outside. One in particular that drove by us yelled at us dykes. And I was like, well, at least I got the gender right. That's cool. But the strangest one was we were crossing the street and this dude, bro, like jumps ahead of his girlfriend and slides onto one of those electric boxes that we used to play on when we were kids. And he was reporting it like he was the freaking Walter Cronkite of the gay. He was like, we got two queers sitting in a tree over here. And I just had to look at him and go, pretty sure we're walking, dumbass. I mean, but it's like, what, you're going to use fourth grade insults? I expected better. If you're going to be shitty, at least come up with something that I didn't hear before I knew what it meant. Okay. I mean, I don't get what compels people to like yell at somebody on the side of the road or somebody that they're walking by who is doing nothing but existing with another person. Like, me and my girlfriend were holding hands and going for a walk. Oh my God, the horror. And this was during Pride weekend. So it was just, this was supposedly the metro area and everything. And it's just like, what compels you to be such an asshole to a person you've never met or, you know, that you just happen to be walking by?
Yeah, but even in Utah, being in a metropolitan area doesn't equate that to any sort of liberal views or acceptance. And I got to admit, I am super surprised that Utah was one that actually had gay marriage on the books before the Supreme Court decision.
Mm-hmm.
And I had always said, I mean, even as a kid, like, I never wanted to live in Utah. I mean, the country is beautiful. I know you were like, oh, mountains, these are so awesome. I'm going to go take like 50,000 pictures, you know. And it was, right? I was so tickled to see that enthusiasm because I love the Rocky Mountains because I grew up next to them there in Colorado. Mm-hmm. And the ones we have here in Pennsylvania don't even compare. You know, these are hills. But I just, the environment there, I was always like, I don't want to live in Utah because it's not the real world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's too many Mormons. And I, as a Mormon, was saying this. I'm like, there's too many Mormons. It's not real. I don't want to live there ever, you know. And, oh my gosh, before I met my, well, I shouldn't say met my husband, but before he and I got together and decided we were going to give this a go and mm-hmm. see what was going on. And I was starting to date after a really bad breakup. My dad actually wanted me, he suggested to me that I move to Utah in order to find a husband. And I was just like, yeah, no. But
maybe that's just because I'm an outsider, but what a fucked up thing to say. Like, oh, you need to go to this place to find a husband.
Well, it's just the fact that, I mean, they have this whole thing about, well, if you've been in the same area for, you know, several years and you're still not married and there's nobody there to interest you, maybe you should move to a new location where there are more people, where there are different people, where you can find your proper Mormon spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I wasn't surprised to hear that, but I was just like, yeah, I don't. No, you don't know. I'll pass, thanks.
Right. And I don't know. I would say that I used to be like a bit sheltered. But at the same time, it's amazing in the last few months that I've gotten to go out and travel as much as I had and see how different areas of this country really are.
Yeah, I mean, whenever we would travel, I know we went up to Minnesota a couple times because my paternal grandmother's family was up there. And so there was a family reunion up there that we went to twice that I can recall. And we went to Utah a lot. We went to Yellowstone every year because that's my dad's obsession and I love it. You need to go there sometime. You mm-hmm. really do. You would love the scenery. It's just gorgeous. And then went out to California a couple times because mom's family was out that direction. And we went up to Oregon a time or two because mom's mom was up there. So, and that's my only living relative, Nana. Well, only living grandparent, I should say, Nana, she's up there. So we went up there a couple times. So our travel was very, very specific, and we wouldn't go a whole bunch of places and go all over the U.S. and everything. And I'd love to visit each of the 50 states at some point, but it's not on the money right now.
Oh, I understand. Believe me. I didn't go to a new state this week, but I did go to a state that I hadn't been in 22 years. And I guess this is the best time to talk about it.
Yeah, so. Definitely. So you went to Flint, and it was the Wolf's Den, was it?
The Wolf's Den in Flint, yeah.
All right. Yeah, tell us a bit about that, because I've never heard of them. I saw a little bit of your Facebook Live that you were doing, but I kept losing connection, so I had to go back to work.
It's still up there, and it's on both my page and the Wolf's Den page if you feel like seeing the whole thing, which okay. It's especially worth it, I think, because you know how we talk about how we get silenced by straight cis white people sometimes?
Yeah.
Well, in the middle of my speech, I got silenced by a cishet white dude out of nowhere over something that we weren't even talking about. So, you know, as much as afterwards I kind of just went and talked to the guy and de-escalated instead of probably righteously screaming at him, like the fact remains that in the middle of my talk, some dude interrupted me mid-sentence to yell at us about the troops. And it was like, we weren't talking about the troops at any point. And he started saying, you guys talk shit on the troops. And I heard it. And I'm like, no, nobody said anything. So it was a really bizarre moment of acting out what some people think is an exaggeration, which is anytime a marginalized group is talking about their issues, inevitably somebody will say, well, what about the troops? And what about blah, 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 blah. It's like, you're doing that just to end a conversation, not to start one. But anyway, that's a specific thing before I got there. I was invited out by someone named Renee, who is a non-binary person and a friend of mine. Thank you again, Renee. And our drive out there was just absolutely humbling. We got into the town and, you know, we saw a couple places that were up and running, but the roads looked terrible. And then the houses were unkept and abandoned, and we got there, and there's probably 15, 20 people living on this property. And like the first thing that I noticed was that there were a lot of Native people. And it was weird to me because I realized at that moment I've never seen one, or at least never knowingly saw an Indigenous person. And there were like 20 of them. And I was just blown away by that. especially because there's so many native indigenous names in the area that I just moved from. Susquehanna, Susquehannock, you know, Conotoguinet, all these things. And I had never seen a native person. And Renee told me, yeah, they came from Standing Rock. And I'm like, oh, fuck.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like, it's the same people. Holy shit. And it just, like, these moments, you know, it started the whole grounding process. That's what I called it. And as I just got further and further grounded, I saw these water tanks set up like septic tanks for people to drink out of. I saw, we went into the bathroom and there are post-it notes saying things like, don't wash your hands. There's lead in the water. Don't flush anything. There, you know, the pipes are so fragile that it can't handle it. You know, use sanitizer. Nobody could shower. Nobody could. And you know, it was like a commune setup. They had a big slab of beef and like 17 things of ramen, and that was going to be split with everybody there. And then I went outside and saw these people who could probably be doing something somewhere else, but they're fighting there for the right to have clean drinking water in a city, in a country that's constantly so up its own ass about how great it is. And there's this group of people just being ignored, except when they had police helicopters constantly flying over the camp. And I don't think that was a coincidence. It's like, there's people from Standing Rock here. I don't think it's unreasonable to think that the cops are looking out for them too, because this country fucking sucks sometimes. But they're more interested in flying over to make sure the protesters aren't getting up to anything than they are an American city doesn't have drinkable water. And they haven't for 2 years, and nobody's doing anything about it. So you probably saw my first speech from Allentown. And if you didn't, it's fine. But, you know, I tend to start off with like a shock poem that I wrote of made up of, you know, shitty things that people have said to me. Because that kind of, you know, gets people a little bit uncomfortable, but also gets their attention. And I realized as I'm looking at all this, I can't do that. These people don't deserve to be any more uncomfortable than they already are. And I should probably be listening a lot more than I'm talking. What the fuck am I doing here? You know, I'm just, I realized they were holding an LGBT workshop, and that's why they brought me in. It wasn't an LGBT center. It was them trying to be more open. So within that, I was happy to have a very reasonable, rational conversation. I did the whole thing sitting down and listening to the questions they had beforehand. It was like, well, I don't know what this word means. I don't know what this word means. Here's this thing. And I'm like, okay, we'll get to that. I'll be happy to help clear some of that up. And then I got interrupted by a dude who yelled about something that we weren't even talking about. And it's like,
God strikes again, huh?
Pretty much. And like I said, I talked it out and hugged the guy. So, I mean, I could have gone Pastor Carl on his ass and nobody would have blamed me, but I didn't. And even after he said that, I saw four Native people get up and escort him away from the tent. And it's just like, holy shit, these people just met me an hour ago and they're already protecting me from one of their own who got out of hand. What the fuck is wrong with this situation here? Why doesn't anybody know what's going on? And why do we have to protest to get clean water in an American city? And how, after so many years, are we still treating Native people this badly? So I gave the speech. You know, I like I said, I hugged it out with the guy. And then I just sat and listened and talked to a lot of them. And it was a whole bunch of people who I found out who didn't have to be there. They were from all over the country. And they were there. And camped there and fighting and doing all they could to help the people who were either still there or stuck there. And I felt so ashamed of myself for not knowing how bad it really was there until I saw it. And I realized, yeah, tonight I'm going to go an hour south and sleep in my cousin's house. And if I need to get a drink of tap water, I don't risk lead poisoning.
Yeah.
That it was just a reality smack. I can't even say reality check. And then over the course of the next like day or two, so many people from that group, and then so many indigenous folk from Standing Rock started friending me, including one who said, I'm going to connect you to this person who is the head of the Two Spirit movement in Standing Rock. And this person friended me, and her profile picture is with President freaking Obama. So it's legit. And it's just, and you know, they both said, we'd love to have you do a workshop here sometime. Just, you know, much bigger than the one you did, because we want to hear what you have to say and your voice is valuable. And I'm just sitting there going, you guys actually like are on the ground doing shit. I'm just a girl who yells fuck a lot. Like, how is this a thing? I felt so undeserving because I was just in such awe of the strength, the determination, and the kindness of all of these people who are protesting something that they shouldn't have to, while Trump takes another vacation on his own golf resorts and, you know,
charges us for it.
Yeah. I know John Edward was a terrible person who, you know, did the thing with the cancer and whatever, but he was right. There, even if it wasn't just that there are two Americas, there are multiple Americas. There's one America where a fat, rich fuck who doesn't know anything can get elected president. And in another part of America, you can poison your own people with knowingly lead-infused water and still get reelected governor of your state. And then just forget about it because, you know, it affects a lot of not white people, so fuck it, right? Like, who cares? It's just drinkable water, and we got to worry about making America great again. So, you know, we got to have 75,000 more tanks, but that thing with the water, oh, that's old news. We don't need to worry about that at all. It's just such a fucked up dichotomy.
So disgusting. Oh, my gosh. Okay, now, I'm just wondering, do they have, like, a nonprofit site or something like that set up that if somebody wanted to donate, they could?
Absolutely. Look up Wolves Den in Flint, or I'm raising money for them as well with my new book.
I saw that.
Yeah. Voice in the Dark is my new book, and it has Dan Errol, No Illusions, Matthew O'Neill, Karen Garst, and a couple others. And built within each price is a donation to Wolves Den. So you can go to rissmccool.com and order the new book through me, and that carries within it a donation to the group, or you can go directly to the Wolves Den in Flint Facebook page and either find the link there or find Haley Renee within that page. And she's in the profile picture with me, so she shouldn't be hard to find. But
Include the link to the Facebook group in the show notes.
Cool. And they should probably be able to help whatever way.
Yeah.
But this was probably one of the most emotionally humbling experiences I ever had. And I'm glad I had it, and I'm going back. And the fact that they consider me a water protector is just beyond anything I've ever known. And I'm honored, and I feel like I don't deserve it. With what all they're doing and what they're going through, the fact that they honor me and want to give me one of the water protector tattoos, I am just beyond words. And I have made a promise that, especially on the Inciting Incident podcast, since it's my most popular listened to podcast, until this is solved, I am going to start every single podcast with Flint, Michigan still doesn't have drinkable water until it's not a thing anymore.
Well, that is awesome. I'm in awe of how much activism you're able to do and that you're able to go out and do all these things. And it's just, it's great.
Well, it's a matter of finally being sustainable enough on the work that I do and, you know, not having to work around a work schedule. And that there's not, you know, I moved, but Aiden and the kids aren't coming out till next week, so I've had a plethora of free time. But even still, like, it's a privileged position to be able to do this, and I'm not unaware of that. So I just try to help as many people as I can. But this is a situation where I'm going to dedicate a lot of energy and effort to helping these people, because now that I've seen it in person and I know they're being ignored, whatever platform I have, I will use to help them in any way I can.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. What did we want to talk about next? Let me see. Well
you were going to... What?
I had fun this week because I had a VA appointment on Monday right after I got back from Ocean City to talk to my doctor about... I've been having a lot of anxiety-related side effects, we'll say, without getting into too much TMI. And so they referred me to the psychologist there at the VA and said, okay, we'll put in a referral and they'll get with you and you can, you know, so I'm thinking, okay, it's going to be about another 3 weeks or something like that. They called me the same day and I went down on Friday to talk to the psychologist that they have. And the way they have it set up, at least at the Martinsburg VA, is this psychologist, she also works primary care and helps out there, but she does counseling as well. And I guess she's at the lowest level and she does 6 office visits and then we go from there and decide what we need to do. But she had me fill out this little test thing, not quite test, but it's one of those scales that, okay, so, you know, here's this statement. Now, how true is it? Or how often do you feel this way? You know, never, sometimes, several times a week, or all the freaking time.
Oh, yeah.
And so with this scale, like half of mine were all the time and several of them were a whole bunch and that kind of thing. So I fell within the brackets of severe anxiety. And the other one she had me take was the same kind of thing about depression. And so I've also got moderate depression. And sitting down and really talking about it, so much of it ties back to the church and leaving the church and the feelings of anxiety I have about my family finding out that I left the church and what they'd say and all this kind of stuff, and the pressures that the church, through growing up in it and everything, like, puts on you. And it's just, oh, I don't even know where to start. So we started with, like, I've got a little app for my phone now that it's got some tools to help try and calm me down when I start feeling anxiety or something, starting with, like, breathing exercises, and I'm supposed to do a thought journal of what was I thinking about when those feelings hit, and, you know, how are these irrational, and what's actually going on. So that's where I'm at right now, and I'm totes overwhelmed with it. So
yeah, I understand. I went through the same thing when I finally found out about CAPS at UPenn when I was still there. And first of all, I was like, how was I not told about this place? Like, there's free counseling and psychologists and psychiatrists. And I only heard about it from the school when the suicide count in 4 years reached 13. And it's like, how do you have this and not tell anybody? How do you have a service that's supposed to help people how are they supposed to help people if they don't know about it? And over the course of the years of treatment that I got there, and now I've continued to hear in Minnesota, which that's another story, but let's just say I was given a lot of misinformation about my gender transition. But anyway, just going through that process and addressing it and, you know, finally having words for what it is so relieving. Because, you know, we always get this shitty cliche from people who pretty much aren't affected by it, but they'll say, there's just too many labels anymore. Why can't we all just be whatever? It's like, first of all, because you've never been considered anything but. And second of all, because not all of us are. And having these diagnoses and these words that explain who we are helps us know who we are better rather than saying, well, what do you do? And it's like, well, sometimes when this happens, that, you know, I feel like this. And instead, there's just a word or a couple of words that communicates the entire idea. And it helps us attach something tangible to those feelings that were just a mess before. And it seems like you're going through that right now, right?
Yeah, I don't even have words because I don't know.
Oh. Well, you're in the beginning,
so much,
too.
So much to deal with. Yeah. And when I have these, I don't want to say anxiety attacks because that's something completely different. I mean, I start feeling anxious and then my guts just get into a twist and I can feel nauseous and everything like that. And it's all because I have too much running through my mind and I worry about everything and I worst case scenario everything all the time. And I have for years. And so it's just like this accumulation of 36 years of pressure that I finally... I was like, okay, I can't deal with this anymore. So I have to figure out what's going on. Is it just, you know, is it a psychological issue? Is it just my body's getting older and it's just rebelling on me? I'm like, you know, what's going on? But with everything going on in the personal and emotional life, it's just affecting me horribly. And even though I know, like, logically there's nothing wrong with going to see a counselor, like,
it's still been drilled into your head that it is.
There's always that stigma. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's, yeah, when you're raised, oh, you know, well, a chiropractor is okay, but, you know, psychologists are quacks. there's something wrong with this picture, but yeah, so it's been interesting for me, though. I was really looking forward to the appointment Friday because I was like, this is finally gonna fix, well, not fix, but we'll finally be able to fix whatever's being wrong with me and messing me up so bad.
Okay. So. Let's clarify something, Molly. There's nothing wrong with you, okay? You're a person, and there's nothing more wrong with you than someone who has a broken leg. But yeah, ignoring the broken leg makes it a lot harder on the person.
Yeah,
so
you can't function.
You are valid, okay? You have nothing to apologize for. You have nothing wrong with you. You're just treating a symptom of something that affects people. And there's no shame and absolutely nothing that you need to apologize for, okay?
I'm just treating the side effect from religion. Yay. Oh, reason number 4,572 that Mormonism sucks.
Yeah.
Sorry. Okay. And speaking of Mormonism sucking, I know this was all over the Patheos blogs. I saw it on HuffPo recently. I saw it, I want to say Naked Mormonism shared it. Friendly Atheist shared it. I'm sure it's just a matter of time before Scathing and Cogdis share it. But there was a young girl, 12-year-old girl, who got up to bear her testimony in Fast and Testimony meeting. And Fast and Testimony meeting is the first Sunday of every month. and you're supposed to fast for 24 hours, and you take that money and you give it to the church so they can put it towards, I don't know, the bishop's storehouse or whatever is supposed to help with hunger.
Mm-hmm.
But then that Sunday, instead of having the normal meeting with, you know, a set three or four people that get up and give talks to the congregation, it's an open podium that anybody can come up and bear their testimony, tell everybody what the church means to them. And it generally turns into this huge, oh, this is what happened this week, and this is how I'm such a righteous person. And it turns into like a brag fest. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. It turns into, I'm so humble and look how great I am. And so this is how the Lord blessed me this week. And then the little kids will go up and they always have like their mom accompanying them, and mom or dad, or even big sister or big brother. And they'll whisper in the little kid's ear, and then it's, I like to bear my testimony. I know the church is true. I know that Joseph Smith was a prophet. You know, and so they just basically recite exactly whatever whoever tells them to say.
But it's not a cult.
Right. And so this 12-year-old girl got up to bear her testimony saying, I know that God didn't make a mistake when he made me. I know that my brown eyes weren't a mistake, and I know he didn't screw up when he made me gay. And she manages to get a couple more sentences out before the head honchos on the stand there tell her to go sit down. And, okay, I am going to play this. I think it's on YouTube, but you can hear this. And, I mean, it's horrifying, but she sounds like the sweetest little girl.
That's...
Yeah, and this was somewhere in Utah. The ward wasn't specified, and this was just on May 7th this year.
Hi, my name is Savannah, and I want to share my testimony with you. I believe I'm a child of heavenly parents. I don't know if they talk to us, but I feel in my heart that they made me, and they love me. I believe I was made the way I am, all parts of me, by my heavenly parents. They did not mess up when they gave me brown eyes or when I was born bald. They did not mess up when they gave me freckles or when they made me to be gay. God loves me just this way because I believe that he loves all his creations. I do not believe he made me. I do believe he made me this way on purpose. No part of me is a mistake. I do not choose to be this way, and it is not a fact. I cannot make someone else gay, and being around me won't make anyone else this way. I believe that God wants us to treat each other with kindness, even if people are different, especially if they are different. Christ showed us this. I believe that we should just love. I believe I am good. I try my best to be nice to each other and stick up for those that are hurting. I know I'm not a horrible sinner for being who I am. I believe God would tell me if I was wrong. I hope someday to go on dates, go to school dances, to hold hands, and to go off to college. I hope to find a partner and have a great job. I hope to get married and have a family. I know these dreams and wishes are good and right. I know I can have all of these things as a lesbian and be happy. I believe that if God is there, he knows I am perfect just the way I am, and would never ask me to live my life alone or with someone I'm not attracted to. He would want me to be happy. I want to be happy. I want to love myself and not feel ashamed for being me. I ask you...
Okay, now what you can't see right here is this is where they're telling her to go sit down. And so she just left the stand, and now wait just a second, and one of these white shirts gets up because, well, I'll explain that in a minute, but he's going to get up and say a couple words of his own. Yeah.
So yeah, that we're all loved by Heavenly Father unless we're different.
And oh my gosh. Well, first off, I want to commend this girl's name was Savannah. I want to commend Savannah for, I mean, even having the courage to go up and do that. I mean, that's a huge thing. And I guess she had it all written out. And her parents had even gone over it with her ahead of time. And they thought, well, okay, it should be good. It's not, you know, they felt that it was fully appropriate for her to do this. Mm-hmm. But the way the church leaders are, if something is said from the pulpit that they don't agree with, that goes against church doctrine and teachings, that's why he got up after her and said that little thing, was they're supposed to try and like set straight whatever dare I say it, blasphemies were said from the stand.
What a bunch of shit.
And I'm just like, oh. So I'm just so, so glad to be out of there. Oh my gosh. The more I see, the more I am just relieved that I'm away from it.
And those are the same people who are probably yelling shit at me.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, I want to say Utah isn't as Mormon as it used to be. There are a lot more people of different religions there than there used to be, but it's still, I want to say 50% in Salt Lake, and it's like 60 or 70% in the rest of the state. But yeah, it's ridiculous. And like Utah Mormons have a stigma even amongst the Mormon church because like they have such an ego about them that they think they're more righteous than even the other Mormons that aren't in Utah and this kind of stuff. They just feel like they're better than everyone. And the whole thing about don't judge and don't be a dick. They just ignore that part, I guess, because they're,
Got mine. Fuck you.
Oh, it's horrible.
It really
so glad
is.
I'm out of Utah. Out of the
I am too, because it means I got to meet you. It means I got to meet you, and instead of, you know, maybe someone you know yelling shit at me. So
yeah. Oh my goodness.
Sorry, this got heavy. Wow.
And we're getting up there in time, so I think we'll have to push the miracle of forgiveness off to next episode.
I think that's okay. And I think this was a conversation on both sides that we needed to have. So I hope you're doing okay. And I hope this helps get you to a place where, you know, you don't have to feel ashamed anymore. You don't have to feel like there's something broken. You are valid the way you are, no matter what.
I'm trying. I mean, I don't know what to do other than, I mean, I gotta just keep reminding myself it's crap and I'm right for leaving And if I mean, if my parents find it out, it's just
Yeah. Well, we got you. No matter what, we got you.
I appreciate that. I really hope you understand how much that means.
I do. I've been there. So it's okay. And it's going to be okay.
And big hugs. And I can't wait to see you at the live show.
Yep.
July 14th, right?
That's right.
Yes, the yep. same day as my next appointment. So I'm going to be going down to the VA and Martinsburg, which is an hour south of me, and then have an hour and a half drive up straight up to the show. And I should be getting there right around 4.
Good, good. Because you can ogle Chris Cluey with me. He's so
and
pretty.
I'm finally getting my wrist hugs.
That's right.
So, all right. Wow. That was fun and emotional, and hopefully I didn't sniffle too bad.
You did, all but right. It's okay.
Well, thank you everybody for listening. If you want to follow Riss, you can find her at Riss McCool on Twitter, right?
Mm-hmm. And if you just type in my name, Marissa Alexa McCool,
everywhere.
it's going to come up.
She's everywhere. She's all yep. over the interwebs.
everywhere.
And then, of course, there's our Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/doubtingdogma. There's Doubting Dogma blog at wordpress.com if you want to just read some of my ramblings. Twitter at Doubting Dogma, and I am Molly Ann Mormon. I will talk to everybody next week, I guess. All right.
Thank you. Good night.